We will continue today our series on biblical tools to build a marriage. You know, learning is a part of life. Nothing is more tragic than to stop learning. You know, I learn something every day. Sometimes it's the University of Hard Knocks. But learning is a continual process. Over the course of the last several months, we have learned about tools to help us build a marriage. We have learned about affection, about attraction, and a sensitive subject about submission. And submission is one of those really sensitive topics. And last time I challenged all of us to take a fresh look at this particular subject, submission as a tool, not a burden or something to be avoided or to fight. We learned that submission is something that is part and parcel to all relationships. Yielding and submitting to direction and the will of others is something that everyone is expected to do no matter what your place in life. And I think that's an important point that we looked at the last time because, you know, we as Americans think that we are free and liberated and other words of the same type, and yet submission is necessary for life to work. Some of it is habitual. I mean, we get used to doing things a certain way, and we yield to a certain course and don't even think about it, and we hardly notice it. In other forms, we resist more than others. We saw that the Bible instructs all to submit, children to parents, wives to husbands, brethren to one another, employees to employers, husbands to Christ, and Christ to God. And yet, this is a sensitive topic, as I quoted and will quote a number of times today. P.B. Wilson put it this way. You can wait patiently for the 4th of July to arrive to enjoy the brilliance of fireworks, or you can mention the word submission to a group of women. Their verbal response is likely to be just as explosive and colorful as any summer rockets or sparklers you could ever hope to see. Few words in the English language evoke such controversial responses as the word submission. It's just the way it is. So today we want to focus on how submission works in marriage. We had looked at who and why in the last study, and today I want to focus on the how it works, you know, when the rubber meets the road. We're talking specifically about the wife's responsibility to submit to her husband. Did you cringe? I hope not. You know, the idea of having to submit is a sensitive one for you. If you did cringe a little bit, you're not alone. Many feel that way. And that's okay, but it's not okay. I mean, it's okay in the sense that a lot of people feel that little cringe. It's not okay because it's not something that we should be resisting. It is something that we should embrace. Submission in marriage, as God intended it, is a very good thing. It should be viewed as a very positive thing, a tool, an asset, something to be embraced. To look at how submission works when the rubber meets the road, I'm going to quote extensively from two books. So in contrast to most of my studies and presentations where I speak extemporaneously a lot, I'm going to spend a lot of time quoting because we have two contrasting, let me back up, we have two views that are in harmony with each other from two authors that are on opposite sides of the spectrum. The one is a Bible believer. The other one is a avowed feminist. Both have learned that to submit in marriage, or to surrender, as the one would call it, brings good results. The one is doing it because she read it in the Bible, and because God said so, she followed the instruction and found that it works. The other one is doing it entirely for the benefits that she receives from it. So I find these two contrasting views to be very helpful because it makes a very powerful statement about the fact that God's way works, even if our motives may not be true. So with that in mind, the two books are Liberated Through Submission by A. P. B. Wilson and The Surrendered Wife by Laura Doyle. My reason for doing this is simple. As I've already explained, you know, the two provide contrasting views. It shows that even though in our technological age, God's principles work. In fact, some of the quotes that I'm going to quote go back to the 17th century, which when it comes to universal principles, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Yes, we have much more technology. We're much more sophisticated in a lot of ways and much more unsophisticated in other ways, actually. If you look at, for example, the vocabulary of somebody that texts, as opposed to the vocabulary of some of the literature that you would read that's a couple hundred years old, there's quite a contrast. I mean, one of the downsides of our technological age, in which we can text back and forth in cryptic messages, because that's just the way it works. We do not develop the skill of being articulate in the way that, you know, some people were years and years ago. So anyway, that's an aside. So let's take a look at some of the quotes by Laura Doyle in her book entitled The Surrendered Wife. Laura, this is a little bit of background on her. Laura Doyle has a degree in journalism from San Jose State University. She lives in Costa Mesa, California, with her husband of 14 years, John Doyle. She describes herself as a feminist. She leads Surrendered Wife workshops and speaks to women about reclaiming passion and intimacy in their relationships. Now, you see here that She has found that by surrendering, as the term that she uses, it increases intimacy and passion in the relationship. And now I want to, before we go any further, she also has what is called Doyle's Disclaimer. And I want to bring out these 4 points because there is a disclaimer. Here's what submission or surrendering is not. Number one, do not surrender to a man who is physically abusive to you. Okay, that's not what we're talking about. Do not surrender to a man who is physically abusive to your children. Do not surrender to a man who has an active addiction. And do not surrender to a man who is chronically unfaithful. So I want to put those disclaimers out there. We're talking about a normal relationship, not a relationship in which you're getting beat to a bloody pulp because you have chosen to surrender to an abusive individual. That's not what we're talking about. The first point here is that to give up control actually gives you more power. Give up control to have more power. Now, this is from Laura Doyle. Remember, she's giving to get, but it still works. This is a quote that she quoted from a gentleman by the name of John Gray. When a man does not feel love just the way he is, he will either consciously or unconsciously repeat the behavior that is not accepted. Now we're learning a little bit about human nature. And I mentioned something to one of my staff members yesterday that even God and Moses couldn't figure it out. But here's some insight into how human nature works. He feels an inner compulsion to repeat the behavior until he feels loved and accepted. That's from John Gray. Now, here's a longer quote from Laura Doyle. Just underneath the urge to control is fear. Think about that for a moment. Why is it that we want control? I think she accurately said it is because we're afraid. Big fear. I go so far as to call it terror. But what is it we're so afraid of? Many women are terrified that their husbands won't know how to perform everyday duties properly when left to their own devices. Now, that may be true, ladies, but just hang on. These women are convinced that their husbands are so inept that they are a perpetual threat to the whole family's well-being, unless, of course, the wives step in. This belief is so prevalent that every day I see exhausted, exasperated women who insist that unless they manage how their husband does everything, be it parenting, tracking the finances, performing his job, or even brushing his teeth, things will fall apart. Now, I'm sure you've seen these kinds of relationships. Women feel the need to control because they fear that if they don't take matters into their own hands, their needs will go unmet. It is possible that your husband is thoughtless or inept, but until you give him your complete trust over a sustained period of time, you can't be sure. Until you stop trying to run his life, you'll never know what it's truly like to be married to your husband. I'm not saying that you are the cause of your husband's shortcoming. At the same time, if you are a nagging, undermining, criticizing, or being disrespectful to him, you are crushing his confidence, intellect, and potential, both emotionally and financially. The scariest part about surrendering to your husband is that it may seem like you're never going to get your way. Again, I point out who's doing the writing. This individual learned that by applying a biblical principle, she can get what she wants. And I find that interesting. Doing the right thing for all the wrong reasons is what we're talking about here. But doing the right thing still works. The scariest part about surrendering to your husband is that it may seem like you're never going to get your way, but the opposite is true. Most universal principles, most of God's principles are counterintuitive. You get the opposite from what you would expect. You know, a lot of people, I mean, we've been called a me generation, in which the unholy trinity of me, myself, and I is worshipped daily. And a reason for looking out for me, myself, and I is so that we get what we need. The reality is that people that order their lives in which it's not just about me actually end up usually certainly being more happy and often being more blessed in tangible ways by their physical possessions. Like I said, it's counterintuitive. When we live to get, we actually get less. When you give up unnecessary control of things your husband does, how he drives, what he wears, what he does at work, how he loads the dishwasher. Well, I mean, at least he's loading the dishwasher. You actually gain power in the relationship and in your life. Doing all the work is not what makes you powerful. It's what makes you exhausted. And again, this is from a very observant feminist. Here are two more situations that illustrate the idea. This is continuing the quote from her book. She gives two examples. Number one, Tony is overwhelmed with doing everything around the house, Tony being the lady or the wife. Going to work, taking care of the kids, and trying to make ends meet when she pays the bills, she has to nag her husband to get him to do things for her. But when he forgets, she frequently ends up doing them herself. Tony lets her husband know how everything should be done, but he can never seem to get it right. Although Tony doesn't realize that her husband is on the verge of having an affair with a coworker who admires him. Let's look at the second situation. Barbara is also busy taking care of kids, but her husband earns most of the income and pays all the bills for the family, so she doesn't worry about that. She often asks her husband for help and relinquishes tasks that are stressful for her. Recently, he attended a parent-teacher conference for their son to relieve Barbara of the chore when she said she found the teacher contentious. Barbara rarely tells her husband what to do. But he is always thinking of things to please her. Although Barbara doesn't realize it, her husband is shopping for a diamond anniversary ring for her. Quite a different situation. Tony is staying in control of everything to avoid being a victim. Barbara is relinquishing control to her husband so she can relax more. Who do you think has the most power? Which one would you rather be? That's from The Surrendered Wife, pages 57 through 58. Insightful observations, isn't it? Surrendering, yielding, submitting. In any relationship, marriage in particular, works. It works. Here's the second point. Respect the man you married by listening to him. This is from James Howell, Dateline 1659, just to point out the fact that some things don't change. Respect a man. He will do the more. James Howell, 1659. Here's another quote. You see an awful lot of smart guys with dumb women, but you hardly ever see a smart woman with a dumb guy. It's from Erica Jong. Probably got in a lot of trouble for saying that. Now let's look at the so-called mother complex. If you feel as if you are only the only adult in the family, think about this. Your husband manages to communicate, problem solve, and produce in his job. Clearly, he has the skills to do the same at home, so why doesn't he do it? When I correct, criticize, or tell my husband, this still is from Laura Doyle, what to do, I automatically become his mother at that moment. Which means he doesn't see me as his lover. I may get the satisfaction of being right or having things done my way, but there's no greater turnoff than for me than seeing him as a helpless little boy that you have to mother. Now again, sometimes it might seem like it's necessary. Your husband may not say so, but he feels the same way. He won't say that when you use that tone that it gives him the same aggravating feeling he used to get when he was a teenager, fantasizing about going someplace where no one would bother him. When you let him know you don't think he'll make good decisions, he reverts to his boyhood ways and makes a mental note to give up to some degree because he can never meet your standards. Thought-provoking, isn't it? Insightful comments from an insightful woman. When a man feels disrespected, they withdraw. Before I surrendered, my husband watched a lot of TV. Yours may find playing golf, working longer hours, or fixing up old cars in the garage more appealing than being with you. Sure, there's some satisfaction in letting your husband know what you really think, but the price of that satisfaction is high. You have just isolated yourself from him and created your own bubble of loneliness. So, again, we have a woman writing this that has keen insight on human nature. Now, I don't think that it is healthy, and I certainly would not want that for my wife. Not that it would make any difference anyway. I wouldn't want her not to express her opinion. And I don't think it's healthy to just keep everything to yourself. But there's a difference between saying what you mean and being demeaning and disrespectful, if you know what I'm talking about. Treating your husband with respect makes him want to be around you more, talk to you more, share more deeply. It can't hurt to remind him and yourself that you recognize you've married a clever, capable man. Oh, now, you know, that goes back to the quote about smart men being with dumb women, you know, who thinks that he's smart even though he may not be that smart. The point is that a man feels good about the fact that his wife respects and admires him, and so it should be. It may not seem like it, but your husband wants to shower you with things that you love. As long as he knows you respect him, all you have to do is tell him what you want or don't want, as in, I want a cat. Oh, my. That would be tough. Or, I want to send the kids to summer camp. I don't want to move. Whenever he can, the husband of a surrendered wife will gladly respond to those words, because one of his foremost goals is to make his wife happy. Remember how it was before you got married? The way things were before you got married is the way things should be after you're married, only more so. Unfortunately, that is not often the case. Whenever I think about men I know who will hold their wives' purses while she's in the fitting room, five up their jackets because she's cold, or run to the store for a box of something or other, I'm reminded of what great lengths men will go to for our happiness. On top of that, you see men commuting to work every day so she can live in a bigger house and driving an older car so she can have the new one. Could their priorities be more obvious? Surrendered Wife, page 38 through 39. Now let's shift gears. Liberated Through Submission by P.B. Wilson. P.B. Wilson believes in submission because she read it in the Bible. Coming from a completely different perspective. As a strong woman married to a strong man, she became angry and frustrated when she first read that submission was the key to a fulfilling marriage in the Bible. She thought God had made a mistake. You know, why mess up a perfectly good book with such a concept? Now she and her husband, Frank Wilson, a Grammy Award-winning songwriter and record producer, conduct marriage and family seminars across America. They've been married for 26 years and have 6 children. And I think that's a little bit dated because the book's a few years old. P.B. Wilson is also the author of Night Comes Swiftly, The Master's Degree, Knight in Shining Armor, and Betrayal's Baby. So here you have a accomplished woman, a Proverbs 31 woman, if you will, that learned from the Bible that submission to her husband is key to a successful marriage. She has some insightful insights on husband-wife dynamics and reached an intriguing, but I believe, accurate conclusion. Okay, this is coming now from a biblical perspective on the same universal principle. Quote, we need to come to grips with the fact that men don't want to submit to God in leading their homes. And women don't want to submit to God in following their husbands. One is just as difficult as the other. Here is one of her points. A submissive wife is powerful. Now, didn't the other author say the same thing? She discovered a biblical principle to get what she wanted. Doing the right thing for the wrong reasons still works, at least at a certain level. Quote, the submissive married woman is a woman of faith, strength, and power. No, that is not a contradiction, but an amazing paradox. We are liberated by the very principle that Satan has worked so hard to distort. You see, Satan has permeated our society and distorts things, and that was his tactic from the very beginning, wasn't it? Did God say, he told Eve in the garden, that you should eat from every tree in the garden? And of course, Eve corrected him and said that you could eat from every tree except save one. And he said, nah, that's not true. A distortion. Today it's called framing. There's another label for it called spinning. The Bible calls it lying. We are liberated by the very principle that Satan has worked so hard to distort. Submission. We are liberated. What are we liberated from? First, we are free from an image or identity that suggests we are inferior and subservient. You know, what's inferior or subservient about yielding in a relationship when that is the essence of what makes it work, no matter what the relationship is? That's a distortion. It is no more inferior or subservient to submit to a husband than it is for a husband to submit to God. Satan would have us believe both. That yielding to God is somehow a demonstration of our inadequacies or weaknesses as a human being, although we are inadequate human beings. Human beings don't want to admit that. Second, we are released from a prison whose bars represent rebellion, defensiveness, contempt, and frustration. It's not a very happy place to live. But most people do. That prison's guards are unbelief, and its walls are fear. And there is but one key that will unlock the door, and the key is faith. That's from Liberated Through Submission, page 101. It's a good read. Notice that she uses the very same terms as the other author, comes to the same conclusion, but for very different reasons. And of course, a relationship in which both parties yield, are first yielded to God, then to each other, will by far outperform the relationship in which it's a game of yielding in order to get what you want. But it works at that level. It's far better than living in the prison that we just described here of rebellion, defensiveness, contempt, and frustration. Two, a submissive wife has reverence or respect for her husband. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 33. And again, I mean, I'm quoting from these books because we talked about the biblical tool the last time, quoted the scriptures. You can go back and take a look at that. We're talking about today, how does this work? Why does it work? And I think these two authors do a very good job at illustrating that in terms we can understand. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 33 says this, Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. So when Paul was addressing the Ephesians, you know, he was not discriminating against women, as some would suggest he did. I mean, what is more challenging, to submit to Christ and to give yourself for your wife in the same way that he gave himself for the church, or for a wife to submit to her own husband in the Lord as Paul qualified it? Continuing in this book, a woman who demonstrates reverence for her husband will have no difficulty submitting. In the Greek, reverence means to be in deep awe or respect of. If you're thinking to yourself, she doesn't know my husband, then you need a more complete understanding of what it means to have reverence for him. As I have meditated on the word reverence, I ask God to give me a relevant example. And then she cites one. Again, this book is a number of years old, so the example that she's citing is dated. Quote, on a prestigious television interview show, former Vice President George Bush was being interviewed regarding the Iran-Contra scandal. I wonder how many people here remember that. I do, which dates me, but quite a few people here that weren't born then. It's a good thing, because life, if we wouldn't have young people, the trolley would come to the end, the last station here pretty quickly. I'm thinking of that because I turned 50 this week. I mean, I've lived for a half a century. Congratulations. And then I find out that Tuesday evening I had a business meeting, and I dutifully informed my wife and found out that she has something else planned. So you can probably imagine what that's going to be. A house full of people congratulating me about becoming 50 was 50 sets of socks and all kinds of other funny stuff that, you know, only only families can do. Where were we? We were talking about the Iran-Contra scandal. Based on the line of questioning, it appeared that the host of the program felt Bush had knowledge of the Iran affair. When he was finally out of time, the journalist cut off the vice president sharply and concluded the program. And the public was enraged. Television executives were embarrassed. Were they angry because they thought Bush was not involved in a scandal? No, people were upset because of the lack of respect shown to a person holding the position of vice president. That's been a long time ago, hasn't it? I'm not sure that the public would, A, be enraged this in 2011, or B, television executives be embarrassed. And I think it's become the modus operandi. We may not respect our husbands for the type of men they are, for their decisions or their leadership. However, God demands that we respect the position he has placed them in as husbands. And that's a strong statement. You know, I'm sure that you have been in positions where an office needs to be respected, or an office demands respect, and the person holding the office doesn't deserve it. That, unfortunately, is too often true. But the office still demands respect. And the office of husband is no different. How does this work? After God had finished unfolding the meaning of reverence, I hung my head and wept. Remember, she was pondering the term reverence. I realized that I had had enough marriage sense to be respectful to my husband on the exterior, but I knew in my heart that I'd never had reverence for him. It's kind of like the kid that smiles. my enterprising daughter now admits, that she found it to be very helpful to feign a good attitude so she could get off the chair upon which she had been sentenced to sit because she had a bad one. But she said, inside, I still had a really bad attitude. I mean, we're all capable of doing such things. She recognized that while she had enough marriage sense to feign a reverence, inside she knew that she didn't have reverence for him. Rarely did we have a conversation where an inward spirit was not rebelling at Frank's words. Remember, she was a strong woman that when she first read the words in Ephesians that Paul expects women to submit to their own husbands, she recoiled at it and wondered why God had made such a big mistake. Rarely did we have a conversation where my inward spirit was not rebelling at Frank's words, her husband. From that moment on, my life changed completely. The first thing I noticed was that all the noisy dialogue within me ceased. Have you ever considered the number of conversations you have with your husband inside your head? Conversations in your head. Oh, I have a good many of them. And most of those conversations are best left unspoken. Many times I would be raging when Frank walked into a room and he hadn't said a word. Little did I know that simple obedience to God's word would open a freedom to me that I had never known. Without my telling Frank about my decision to respect him, he began to change in ways that I could never have imagined in the first 15 years of our marriage. He began to change. Really? What changed? Notice what she said. Without me telling Frank about my decision to have reverence or respect for him, he began to change in ways I could never have imagined. She changed her attitude, her approach, sincerely and internally, and he changed. It's funny how that works. 3. A submissive wife is a helpmeet. I could go on about that particular topic and make light of it, but let's see what she says about Genesis chapter 2, verse 20. And Adam gave names to all cattle and to the fowl of the air and to every beast of the field, but for Adam there was not found an helpmeet for him, King James Version. Hence, God created a woman by taking a rib from the man. Who is more important, the helper or the person in need of help? Because you remember, Laura Doyle said men are, well, they need a lot of help. I will let you draw your own conclusion. Quote, up until recently, I thought being a helpmeet meant cleaning the house, taking care of the children, and generally keeping things in order. It wasn't until I began reverencing Frank and allowed some growth time to pass that the word helpmeet took on a new meaning, the meaning God had originally intended. The areas in which I had tried to be efficient are certainly necessary to daily living. However, my husband could pay someone to do any of them. What I am able to offer Frank in our relationship cannot be filled by anyone but me, his wife. I bring to him a counterpart to his own personality. All men and women are deficient in some aspects of their lives. I've come to understand that as I develop myself spiritually, I become more and more the complement my husband needs to bring positive dimensions to his character and personality. Help meet the perfect complement to him, our marriage ceremony states. Likewise, Frank's clear-eyed, practical point of view and male perspective balance my more emotional approach to life. Opposites, they say, attract. And a difference in perspective is indispensable in successful relationships and organizations. Different perspectives are indispensable. Because what one person overlooks, another person sees, and there's safety in that. In an effort to be the woman who can best fit that important helpmeet role, I've begun to meditate on his word day and night. That truth has set me free. I'm free to live, free to love, free to discover God's inexplicable riches of wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. Their relationship improved dramatically because she applied one of God's principles. It's counterintuitive, as so many universal principles are, but they work. It's important that our vision for our marriage and God's vision be the same. The instructions are clear. Wives, submit. We must believe by faith that God knows what He is doing. Believe me, as in all other things, God does know what He's doing. And I think that's an important aspect of understanding God's Word. God, the great Creator, the all-powerful, the Creator of everything, by right, could demand everything. Because He owns it, doesn't He? He created it. He made it. He made us. And yet what we find out is here you have this all-powerful being that has as his central purpose sharing himself and his creation with everybody. It's rather novel idea, isn't it? It's certainly not what we see in this world, in which greed is considered to be good. I mean, it is true that in our world that the consequences of greed have served as the most effective regulator of human behavior, hence the success of the free market instead of a regulated market. And the reason is simple. You know, if somebody in the free market, if someone or some organization becomes too greedy, there are other greedy people out there that will want to get a piece of the pie, and that tends to self-regulate human nature. It's an unfortunate situation, actually, you know. It's kind of like what Winston Churchill said about democracy. Democracy, Winston Churchill is quoted as having said, is the worst form of government ever devised by man. Except for all the rest that we've tried from time to time. I mean, it's a unique way of putting it. Same is true with the free market. God has a completely different perspective, and he lives it. He wants to share it with us in its fullness, in particular in our marriages and in the church. We of all people should enjoy the richest and most meaningful marriages of any people on this earth. Doesn't mean that it's not difficult, doesn't mean that there aren't problems. But when both parties are yielded to God, it works at a level that doesn't otherwise work. Continuing and concluding here was a quote, "I hope if you've ever asked, are you a submissive wife?" Let me state that again. I hope if you are ever asked, are you a submissive wife, you will answer, yes, I am a woman of strength and faith and power because I submit. We should be bold. Because you know what? If we don't stand up to be counted, while we still have a measure of freedom of speech, the time will soon come in which we will no longer have freedom of speech, if it hasn't already arrived. We should not apologize for the hope that is in us. You know, when you have reports of the word God being censured from a military cemetery, and you have the 9/11 10-year memorial, and Mayor Bloomberg has disinvited the clergy, it shows where we are. So I would challenge all of us to unapologetically stand for what we believe. Because the day may come in which it's not as easy to do so, and then we will be challenged by God to do it anyway. As have those faithful down through time with great consequence on many occasions. Because we've been living a 250-year historic anomaly in the United States of America. And because of it, I think we've come to not appreciate it and become lukewarm. If you're ever asked, are you a submissive wife, your answer will be, yes, I am. Then you can smile as your inquisitors walk away with bewilderment written all over their faces. And so you should. Brethren, we've looked at a series of tools to build a marriage. Put them in your toolbox and carry them with you and use them every day. We will have a blessing on a meal before we eat by Mr. Chauvin, but we'll do that over in the other room.